Well, I'm pleased to say that I had with me Captain Greg Tonneson from Fremantle Pilots. Welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Greg.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
Now, you're the managing director of the entity which trades as Fremantle Pilots, is that right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
Now, how long has Fremantle Pilots, as a separate entity, operated?
Yeah, it went private in 1994. So, prior to that, they were working as employees with the Port of Fremantle.
And today, Pilots who are engaged to bring in ships in Fremantle and nearby are all part of Fremantle Pilots?
Yeah, all the pilots are Fremantle Pilots. Every pilot in Kwinana and Inner Harbour throughout the whole port of Fremantle are all Fremantle Pilots.
And they're all members of the company that operates Fremantle Pilots?
Yeah, they're all equal share directors of the company.
And there's 13?
13 total, yeah.
Now, I want to ask you in a moment a little more about the background of pilots and where they come from and their love of the sea and all of those sorts of things.
Yeah.
But before we get there, just tell me, I think the full name of your organisation is the Fremantle, Kwinana and Cockburn Sound Pilots.
Yes. Yeah.
So that suggests that your jurisdiction, if I can put it that way, where you work, is beyond Fremantle Harbour.
Yeah, it's the Inner Harbour and the Outer Harbour. So the Outer Harbour is down in Kwinana, and that's the grain berth right up through to the Australian Maritime Complex. And we also do the Navy base as well on... not on Australian Navy ships, but on other types of vessels that go to the Navy base.
So tell me, how many ship movements do you have a day? How many times do you come in and out as a pilot?
Oh, roughly, it does fluctuate. On a busy day, we might have up to 30 or more moves. And then quiet days, we can have 10 moves. So it fluctuates a bit.
And how's business at the moment?
Yeah, just steady. It's dropped since the mining boom, since the construction phase of the mining boom stopped. And now we're back to just normal ships, whereas before we were doing a lot of vessels associated with the mining boom, which was the offshore vessels, tugs, you know, barges, small heavy lift ships. All the vessels were involved in bringing the construction equipment to build all the big mines up north.
Oh, it's just amazing when you think about it, what comes in to the port.
Oh, yeah, it was pretty busy then. But that's all gone now, so we've had about a 10% drop. That was about 10% of our total throughput into the port was from the mining boom.
So the ships that you deal with, what are the range, typically, of ships, sorts of vessels, their age and what they're bringing into the port, where they're coming from?
Yeah, the ships are... range from, you know, we can do small offshore vessels, 30-meter, 40-meter ships. I think the minimum is 30 meters required, or was it tonnage for pilotage? I forgot, was it 300 tons or something like that? I can't remember exactly. And it requires a pilot. And so we can do anything from a 30-meter vessel right up to the Ovation of the Seas, which was 347 meters.
So, and is that the biggest?
That's about the longest ship we've brought in into the Inner Harbour, is 347.
And you've had the thrill of bringing that one in.
Yeah, we all had quite a few of us had a go on that one. I think we had about six or so pilots have had a try on the Ovation, maybe a bit more.
Now tell me, in your own case, how did you get into this business of being a marine pilot?
Yeah, so I was a mariner from when I left school and went to Maritime College in Tasmania. Worked for BHP Shipping, did my training with them as a cadet, and then went to sea with BHP, and then continued on and went to sea with other companies. But I kind of diverged from the other guys in my year, and I went I went into tall ships actually for quite a few years, and I was a captain of a tall ship in Asia and here in Australia.
Now, we'll divert for a moment in the same way, take a slightly different channel, not go straight to gauge roads, but tell us about your tall ships experience. What happened there?
Yeah, so I did... I joined the Lewin, actually, with my first tall ship, as the mate, chief mate, and then did a few years there. Then I went to Hong Kong on another tour ship, Jifeng, and went there as a mate for a year, and then became master, and stayed there for about 7 or 8 years, and then came back to Australia and went back on the Luan as master, and I went ashore as well as the CEO of the Luan.
And were you involved in the Daifuken at all?
Yeah, actually, I was the first master to sail her.
And
the very first master.
Well, isn't that something? The original ship having come along in the early 1600s or something, didn't it?
Yeah, I wasn't heavily involved, but they needed a master, and I was available, so I took her out of Fishing Boat Harbour, I think it was, for the first time.
Yeah. So, as I say, while we diverge slightly, what's the attraction and what's the role of tall ships these days?
Yeah, tall ships. I was mainly involved in youth development and training. Well, Luan was about youth development, so providing experiences for young people to learn first time away from home, etc. The Jifeng Hong Kong was more catered for some youth, but more for, it was an outward bound program, so it catered more for young employees of companies. So we had a lot of early 20-year-olds from the companies would send them on an outward bound course. So it was, again, a personal development course.
Coming back to pilots, particularly pilots here at Fremantle Pilots, I take it from what you've said that everyone has a shipping background. They know what it's like to be on a ship. They may have even been a master of a ship and then find their way to being a pilot.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Fremantle pilots, they're all from the maritime shipping industry. We have one, I think, who was from the Navy who transferred across to the maritime industry. But everybody was basically in the maritime, served as mates or captains on board ships, and then came to Fremantle pilots. Most of them had ready pilot experience before they came here.
Now, you've got a wonderful chart here in your office, which provides something of the history of pilots at Fremantle.
Yep.
And I gather from that you haven't always had to have a pilot if you enter a harbour, but here you have for many years, I think.
Yeah, I don't know when that started, but it's compulsory pilotage. It's in the Port Authorities Act, so there's an act that says pilotage in Fremantle is compulsory, and that's managed and regulated by the harbour master.
And it may be obvious, but in broad terms, why is it necessary to have compulsory pilotage?
From port authorities, that's probably a question for them, but and the minister, I suppose. I think they want to make sure their infrastructure is protected, so we don't block. If you had anybody bringing ships in, you might block the channels. If you block the channel, then you basically stop the port, and you stop the port, you stop the economy. So you
need to do it right.
Yeah, and also the other big thing today is spilling oil. So if you had black beaches on Cottesloe, wouldn't go down too well with the public. So pilots are really there to protect the infrastructure, protect the environment, provide a service to make sure ships come in and out quickly and safely. Not quickly, but not too slow, but
correctly.
Yeah. But now, otherwise, if you had people that weren't pilots, it might take a long time, or they might stuff it up. Yeah.
Is there any suggestion that pilots wouldn't be required? Is there any move in that direction?
The only time they're not required is if their ship is an Australian ship and has Australian master, and the Australian master has done enough moves in and out of the port, they can get an exemption. But currently, there's not that many exempt masters, maybe less than a handful that I know of.
Now, let's explain briefly to our listeners just what the pilot does. We're qualified, we've been accredited, we're a member of Fremantle Pilots. these ships are coming and going at the places you've mentioned, yep. Coburn Sound, Kwinana,
yeah.
here in Fremantle, yep. Inner Harbour. And you know the ship's coming in, you've got a schedule, presumably.
Yeah.
How does the pilot get to the ship?
Yeah, so basically we've got a pilot boat, quite a new pilot boat, which we actually own and lease to the port. The port operator.
What's the name of that boat?
Barclay, it's right. called. That was built here in Dongara by a local boat builder. So
down at Henderson?
No, Dongara, up near Geraldton.
Oh, at Dongara.
Dongara, yeah. So they built a few of them, and very exceptional boats. That's why we were keen to buy one. And really well built and very, very good at their job, basically. And so we get on board the Barclay, on board the pilot boat. And then the pilot boat, we get on board in the inner harbour, let's say, and then the pilot boat brings us out to the ship, which could be in Gage Roads or it could be further out off the fairway buoy. And then we climb up the ladder and we walk up to the bridge, or on the big ships we can take the elevator up, and then go on right up on top of the bridge with the master and the bridge team, and then we take over control of the bridge of the ship and what they call the conduct. We take the conduct of the vessel, and the master gives us a hand as we, you know, he just helps as we bring it in, basically.
So do you supplant the master in that role?
Yeah, the master's really doesn't get in, you know, they don't get that involved. They're aware of what's going on, and they, you know, they're keeping an eye on things, but they're really not. The hands-on is all done by the pilot.
In a practical sense, the pilot does bring that ship in.
Yeah.
The master presumably remains in ultimate control.
Yeah, the master can take over at any time. It's according to the how the law works. And the pilot is not liable in any way. Although there are some changes to that. There's been a few cases in the US where the pilot was seen to be liable and ended up in jail.
Oh my goodness. Statutory lesson.
Yeah, so there are some changes in the law there which are a little bit concerning. But generally, under the Navigation Act, the pilot is limited to liability is limited. So there's very, very limited liability for the pilot. In fact, virtually no liability. And same with the port.
Now,
so the it all comes down to the master. So the master it's the ship and the master.
Now, you mentioned boarding the ship out in Gage Roads or beyond the fairway buoy.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And why one or the other?
So if it's 11 metres or more, then you go out to the fairway buoy. And if it's less than 11 metres, you can board in Gage Roads.
Now, that's boarding it and coming in. What if are you taking the ships out as well?
Yeah, we do the same thing. So again, if it's 11 metres or more, you take it right out off fairway buoy, and then you get off there, and if you through the deep water channel. And if it's less than 11 metres, you can take the Gage Roads.
And what's the role of others in all of this? The Port Authority more generally, the tugs that are engaged?
Yeah, so we use the tugs to, you know, berth the ship or unberth the ship. So we instruct the tugs through the radio, and the tug master just basically repeats back the orders. So we basically got standard commands that we use, and everything's pretty standardized.
So we were talking about the various sorts of ships that come into the harbour, but you mentioned the Ovation.
Ovation of the Seas, yeah.
And presumably there are bigger ships, well, not bigger than that, but big ships that are smaller than that. Particular sorts of ships?
Yeah, the container ships are getting bigger, so they're getting up to 306 metres at the moment, which is... and 42-44 metre beam, so quite big post-Panamax ships, quite big ships, and they're quite a handful, especially in high wind.
So is there a particular challenge from a cruise ship like the Ovation to a big container ship? Are they different beasts to manage?
Yeah, the passenger ships, for example, the Ovation, that one handles really well. It's got a lot of very powerful thrusters and the propeller, you know, it's really the azimuth drive at the back of the ship, very strong and very instant. So handles extreme in turns very well, whereas compared to an old, you know, 10-year-old container ship, they're a bit more of a pig compared to the innovation of the seas. So they handle a lot more differently.
And what about the ships that find their way down to Coban Sound?
Even jetties? Worse again, yeah.
Even what?
They're worse again.
they're older, are they?
They're just designed. They're just big boxes, and they don't have. Yeah, they handle worse than the container ships. Some container ships, the new ones, are pretty nice, and some of the ro-ros, car carriers, are very good. Some of the new ones.
Now, is this a job that has you up at all hours of the day and night?
Yeah, 24/7. So we're 365 days a year. We don't stop, basically. So we got pilots on duty all the time.
So they're bringing in ships, what, in the dead of night?
Yeah, we do a lot of grain changeovers at 2 in the morning. Yeah, it always seems to happen at 2 in the morning, grain changeover.
Is that part of the schedule, getting the ships in and out easily and not having too much congestion?
Yeah, they just have to spread them out during the day to make sure they can get them all in. And sometimes ships have to just wait for their slot. But generally, you know, we're all pretty good and we get them in pretty much when required. There's usually not a lot of weight for them.
Now, you mentioned earlier about high winds. Should one take it from that comment that the hairiest part of being a pilot is being caught in quite inclement, windy conditions?
Yeah, and when it's raining and the visibility's poor, that always gets a bit, it gets a bit tricky because you can become disorientated when your visibility's, when you don't have a lot of visibility, you got to concentrate very well to make sure you know where you are spatially. Yeah, spatial awareness can be detracted when it's rainstorms coming through and so on.
Now, you look into the harbour and you often see ships that you come to recognise. Do you see a lot of the same?
Yeah, we've got a lot of regular callers and... Yeah, and it's a bit like a car, you know, you get used to driving a Toyota or a, you know, Hyundai, and they're all sort of similar models, you know, so the Japanese built ships, you know, are going to be very similar, and, you know, they're going to be reliable and they're going to handle well.
So do you get to travel and study the different sorts of shipping that's coming through these days?
We've got a Australian Marine Pilots Institute, which we keep in touch with each other and have conferences during the year. Usually they aim for two conferences in a year, and we share information and so on the new ships. And we have the same ships come into the same, you know, each other's ports, so we get to know, and you know, different types of ships and shipping companies, and we talk about that, and you know, there's some companies are better than others, and so we share those sort of.
So do you see big changes happening in shipping and piloting in the, you know, the 10, 20 years ahead?
Not so much in the near future, but there is talk of automation. And it
seems
can
to be
done.
The constant discussion. AI is everywhere.
Yeah, it can be done, but in shipping, it's a lot easier to automate cars than it is to automate ships. Because
what would that involve? You'd have a ship leaving somewhere full of containers with virtually no one on board.
Yeah, I think the automation was that they talked about. They just have a few technicians on board. Not even sure if they'd have a master, and they would basically. Have tram lines on the ocean and get from A to B, and then once they got to the port, there'd be a team that would go on board, which would bring the ship in. So you'd have a pilot and a mooring gang and a team that would actually tie the ship up, or they can't even use big magnet, so they can't even use that sort of system as well. But that's a long way off. To fully automate is many years away. And the ships would have to all have individual, you know, specific, very accurate thrusters fore and aft, which most of the ships, more than 70% of the ships don't have that. Yeah, it's really only the passenger ships, and some of the ro-ros that have that sort of accurate thrusters. Yeah. Even container ships don't have them.
Now, you were mentioning when you board the ship, out in Gage Reyes, for example, when does the pilot's responsibility finish in that process?
Yeah, so once you get up to the bridge and you've done a master pilot exchange, and the master is happy, you then take over the conduct of the vessel, and then you bring the ship all the way in till you come alongside and every line is made fast, and then you basically finish, you know, the pilotage is over then, and you go down the gangway and off you go. Yeah. Yeah. Now, so it's really up to you all fast alongside.
Yes. From a personal professional point of view, what's the good fun part of the job?
Yeah, no, just the ship handling side is, I mean, that's why people become pilots. They enjoy the ship handling, and yeah, there's some challenge in that. I mean, it is also a bit like driving a car. You get quite used to it, but you still got to be attentive because things can go wrong. So you got to be, you can't get too blasé about it all. And when the weather's up, then you're challenged a bit more when the winds are up, and that can be quite fun.
And you were mentioning that you sometimes bring in foreign naval craft.
Yep. Yeah. And yeah, that's quite fun. Yeah, it's quite different.
And whereabouts do you pilot them to, typically?
All the way in the Inner Harbour, a lot of them. So we bring them in.
There were some in recently, weren't they? A couple of months ago, there some Spanish ships?
I can't remember. Yeah. So we brought those in. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Do they present a different sort of challenge? Are there security issues? Are you limited to in a way from what you do?
No, they're pretty relaxed. The only difference is, US, if you're on a US Navy ship up on the bridge, on a cargo ship, there's the guy on the wheel, guy riding up, doing the movement book and the controls and the master, and you, there's about four of you on the bridge. But if you go on a US Navy ship, could be 30 or 40 on the bridge, and you're all jammed in like sardines, and they're all repeating them. As soon as you say an order, everyone gets repeated about 20 times. They're quite funny. Yeah. It's quite interesting, actually. Yeah.
And what's the most difficult thing about the job that really keeps you on your toes?
Yeah, I think, the high weather, but that's quite exciting. And the other thing is, just try not to be too complacent. You got to keep making sure you're concentrating on what you're doing and don't get in too automatic.
Looking for equivalence, and I imagine nothing's quite equivalent, but is it a little bit like an air traffic controller's job, do you imagine, so that they don't get onto the aeroplane and you get onto the ship?
Yeah, well, it's a bit like an airline pilot that lands the plane, just a landing component or the takeoff component.
Yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes we have the Australian Marine Pilots Institute and the airline pilots sometimes work together on and come to each other's conferences.
Oh, that's interesting. So what do you learn from each other?
Yeah, they've got, well, for one, there's something called BRM, which is Bridge Resource Management, which is basically bridge team, so how the bridge team works. And that was stolen from the airline industry, so they've got CRM, which is cockpit resource management. So we initially, the airline industry stole the maritime industry's systems, whenever that was, 100 years ago, or whenever airlines started, and then the airlines really got really good at, because it's a new industry. Maritime industry's been around for 2,000 or 3,000 years, and it's kind of set in its ways. Whereas the airline industry is only 100 years old, I suppose. And so they had an opportunity to really get it, all the systems in place at a very high level. So they've now much higher level than the maritime industry, the systems they have in place. So we're now stealing some of their systems and how they, because they do checks and double checks. And again, we don't have to do it as to that degree, because ships are big, heavy pieces of metal, and if one bolt's missing, it's probably not going to be the end of the world. Whereas an airplane, if one thing's screw's missing, then you know, plane can go down. So it's more critical on a plane. But the systems are similar, and we copy each other.
It's the systems analysis. That's
yeah, and the incidents. We talk about each other's incidents. So there's some similarities.
What's an incident in?
Well, the last one I went to, the last conference, we had the Qantas pilot who was on board. See, they do pilot checks, check pilots. So we check each other to make sure everyone's doing the right thing. So I'll go on board with another, you know, colleague and check and sign off.
Is that on every piloting?
No. This is from time throughout to time. The year. Yeah, you have some, you know, so many check pilots during the year. And airline, we copy that from the airline industry. They do check pilots. And at the last conference, the check pilot was on board the Qantas plane that flew through the birds and lost their engines coming into Singapore, and he talked about that incident and the learnings from that incident, and we sort of shared that with him, and he shared it with us, I mean, and the things he learnt out of it. And you know, one of the things he said is I was doing a check pilot on the pilot, and then the emergency happened, and he never actually told that pilot that he was checking that the check pilot had finished, so the pilot thought he was being checked throughout the whole emergency.
Amazing.
Until a week later he said, oh no, I just, once the emergency, I wasn't checking you anymore. But they never had that conversation, so it's quite, because the pilot that was in charge felt he was being checked while he was going through the emergency.
Well, had enough to worry about.
So it was an added thing for him to worry about, but they actually managed it all very well. But
now, you must have to liaise yourself, quite apart from pilot checks and the like, and the work you're doing with, well, first of all, the Port Authority here.
Yeah.
Fremantle runs Coburn and the Outer Harbour and the Inner Harbour.
Inner Harbour, yeah.
And you must have to deal with the shipping companies as ships are coming
in. Yeah, generally, because we contract to Port of Fremantle, We deal directly with the Port of Fremantle, so we liaise directly with the harbour master or the deputy harbour master. And the harbour master and the deputy liaise with the shipping company. So we don't, because we're contractors, basically. Port Authority, and then they then talk to the shipping companies.
Yes.
That's the channel, you know, the communication channel.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't get involved directly with the shipping company. And we do when we're on board, of course. We were talking to the master. And we'll go to meetings. If the harbour master asks us to come to a meeting with a shipping company, we'll go and meet them.
In terms of just the day-to-day life of a pilot, you mentioned the Barclay, the new
pilot boat
that gets you up
quickly
to these places. And we'll put a photograph of that up.
Yep.
Are there other pilot boats that you get to use?
Oh, we got, there's three in the port. The Parmelia, which came in 99, I think, so it's getting a bit older. And then the Paddy Troy. So there's three boats altogether. And sometimes we'll have two boats out at once, but not very often.
Are they stationed in particular locations?
They're all in Fremantle, Inner Harbour, just under, near the traffic bridges.
Right.
That's where they're stationed.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just operate out of there. We pick them up at Cork Hill Landing between A and B shed.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Greg, thanks very much for talking to me about the life of a pilot, what Fremantle Pilots does, and giving us an insight into that. It's been most useful, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to be interested to hear.
Yeah.
We look out into the harbour, we look out into Gage Roads, we see the ships or sitting there at night with lights on. They're not just sitting there sleeping, from what you're saying. Yeah. They're getting ready to come in.
Yeah.
And that area, just thinking about it, at Gage Roads, are they ships as we look into the night and see the lights, or during the day when we see them, that could be going to any of them?
Yeah, they're waiting for a berth. So they're waiting to go to Alcoa to get alumina, or they're waiting to go to the grain jetty. So the grain jetty's already got a ship on it, and they've got to finish loading, 30-hour loading or whatever it is. And once they finish loading the ship at anchor, a pilot jumps on board there and brings it in to the grain jetty and puts it alongside when the other ship comes off.
And so far as the big or the smaller cruise ships are concerned, do they typically come into port at a particular time of the day?
Cruise ships generally come in the morning and then sail in the evening. That's the journey off 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning, and then they're in alongside for breakfast. And then I think passengers go into Frio and have coffee or whatever, and then they sail at 5 o'clock in the evening.
like cruise ships everywhere.
Yeah.
And from your own personal point of view, is there a particular ship or style of ship that you love to be the pilot on?
Yeah, some of the new fast container ships are good, and the some of the new, brand new ro-ros are quite good to handle.
And is that because it got just the latest technology?
Yeah, and they just handle very well, and yeah, the engine, everything works, and the thrusters all work, and it's all instantaneous. Yeah, they handle like little dinghies. Yeah.
And do you see a period where there'll be a complete changeover, where you no longer have the old clunkers?
Yeah, it's going to take a long time, because the bulkies still are in the dirt. The ships that carry the commodities like iron ore and grain are still way back in the past.
Oh,
they're going to take years. It's just not economical to bring them up to that higher level.
And what are the crew sizes typically on these various vessels
days? I think it's 20, early 20s, I think, around 22 or something.
But typically on any of these ships, that's the size of the crew?
Yeah. They're under 30 now. I think it's 28, maybe some have 28, 27.
When you started out in the marine world, what were the crew sizes?
When I started, we had... I was on the Iron Mittagong. That was, I think we had 48 on there.
So well and truly double what you get on this.
And then they had the Crawford Report. I can't remember when that came out. And that dropped it to 27 or 28 in Australia.
Yes.
That was an Australian report came out. And that dropped the manning down. And I was still at sea then. And we dropped to 28, 27.
Yeah. So it's all tied to this AI or just further efficiency drives?
Yeah. I mean, because the manning is one of the biggest costs, fuel and manning. So the more they can drop the manning. And a lot of it, I mean, it's probably what killed the Australian shipping industry is the manning costs. Because, you get Russian crew and masters and they're very cheap. And Filipinos they're getting more expensive now. So it's the Russians that are the cheapest at the moment. And, that's why Australian shipping, they just can't compete with that kind of, with that cheap labour.
Now, one final question, which landlubbers always get excited about, is the question of piracy. You often hear about this. Is that an issue that ever...
Oh, yeah, it's huge.
Comes across your bow?
Oh, all the time. It's a huge issue. We don't have it in Australia, obviously. I don't think there's any cases in Australia, but we see the ships coming here. So when the Somali, this was going a few years ago now, about 3 years ago, a lot of the bulk ships were coming and you'd have to step over the sandbags to get into the bridge, out on the bridge wing. There'd be sandbags all around the bridge.
This is their fortifications, isn't it?
And barbed wire everywhere. The whole ship's barbed wire. And, all the accommodation and around the ship, it's all barbed wired, with that rolling, steel wire and sandbagging the bridge because they would shoot rockets at the bridge.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah, so they were... I don't see as many of them now, but every fifth ship would be like that. That with the bulkies, a lot of them were because they were all doing that run past Somalia.
And that's where most of the piracy was landed.
It seems to have slowed down a bit. I haven't seen one of those sandbag ships for a while now.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for speaking to us, and wish you Oh, well, not too many rainy, low visibility, windy nights. Okay. Thanks, Greg.
No, thank you. Yeah.